Here we go. Welcome to BP WrigleyCast, the Cubs podcast that looks at the game from both the analytical and the fans' point of view. Today is the day after game, what was that, five? Cubs won. They are up 3-2 over the Dodgers. I'm joined by Joel Reese and Isaac Bennett. It's amazing. It's been downs and ups. Yesterday, the Cubs obviously taking the lead in the series, going back to Wrigley tomorrow. Everybody's feeling good, although it is Clayton Kershaw in Saturday night's game. Let's discuss a little bit about the game and how things are looking for the remaining game, hopefully, of this series. And I'll start with you, Joel. What did you see yesterday? What did you think? Any positives and or negatives, as I know that Montana Joel is no longer?
Well, I mean, it was incredibly nerve-wracking, you know, the first, four or so innings. After this, Cubs only scored one run in the first inning and just kind of felt like they had a couple opportunities. They just didn't cash them in. And it's so frustrating when you see that, because I feel like time and time again, when a pitcher is kind of on the ropes and you don't knock him out, he gets momentum. Can you guys hear me? Because I heard a weird noise. Okay, cool.
Yep.
So I felt like on thin ice because I was, you know, being fatalistic, of course. And then when the Dodgers tied it, then
Joel?
I think we may have lost Joel there for a minute, but do you still have me, Carlos?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, I think the point that he was making is that it felt like early in the game, the Cubs had left a lot of base runners on base, even in that first inning when they got a run, but still left two guys on. It felt like maybe the Dodgers could get the momentum back. And sure enough, they came back and tied it in the fourth. And you did sort of just have this feeling that Kenta Maeda had been left off the hook and let off the hook, and that perhaps the Dodgers could get the momentum back and, you know, maybe shock the Cubs. But I think credit goes to John Lester, because Lester didn't let that happen. He never let the Dodgers get in his head. And I thought their strategy to try and get on first base and then act like a bunch of little leaguers out there was woefully misplaced. I have no idea what they were thinking there. And it got them off their game rather than getting Lester off his. And frankly, I thought it just completely diluted their approach at the plate. So huge credit to John Lester. And I do want to hear back from Joel again, since Carlos, you and I are kind of young men and we don't remember 45 very well. I think Joel was like 16 when the Cubs were last in the World Series. So I just kind of want to know, as a high schooler, what he felt.
Are you there, Joel? Or did we lose you again?
He might have died, so who knows?
He is very old. But no, I think it was interesting that I'm curious why Roberts decided, and the players too, decided to talk so much about that strategy on, you know, quote unquote, trying to get into Lester's head, which, saying that alone, just is like great bulletin board material for the other team. So for one, kind of putting that out there ahead of time was kind of strange, even though it is kind of well known now. So I thought that was weird. And the other thing I found interesting, and I think it was the broadcasters that mentioned it, that said, oh, well, you know, Dave Roberts loves his bullpen so much that four innings out of Maeda, oh, they're thrilled. And I thought that was a little weird. I know it's the playoffs. I know we're going to have pitching changes every third of an inning. But really? You're thrilled when your starting pitcher goes four innings and then you got to go into the bullpen? I don't know. That was a little weird.
Yeah, he can love it if he wants, but the fact of the matter is it's not that good beyond Kenley Jansen. And I mean, can we all just petition for Pedro Baez not to ever be allowed to pitch again? Because I need some sleep in the worst way, and 49 seconds between every pitch is just absolutely killing me over here.
These games are just so nuts. What was it, 4 hours and 12 minutes or something yesterday?
Yeah, maybe even worse, and it's a 9-inning game. It's just, it's not acceptable, and it's not good for baseball.
And shifting gears over to the Cubs side now, John Lester just killing it, straight up killing it. he needed to come up with a big game, and he delivered. He wasn't happy with some of the calls he was getting. Didn't matter. He kept working. I love the little hop throw he threw to first and the stare down that followed. The whole thing, he did great. The offense is I guess we can say now is back. And I hate to do this, but I do want to talk a little bit about Jason Hayward and just the fact that he seems so lost, and we're pretty much ready to all just say, you know what, especially with Kershaw pitching, just forget about him, leave him on the bench, bring him in late innings for defensive purposes. I still feel like he's my pick to do something with the bat that is going to surprise us so much that we'll be so happy. But I'm curious to hear what you think, Isaac. Worth waiting, or it's time to put him on the bench?
Well, in this series, it's time to put him on the bench. I can't fathom him making solid contact the rest of this series. My brother was saying the same as well. It's just you cannot start that guy against Clayton Kershaw and Rich Hill. You need offense. You need Wilco in there. You need Javi Baez in there. And, I wouldn't even mind seeing Soler or Almora, maybe even Almora, get a start. So that's where I am. If you're going to go with a defensive option, go with Albert Almora. I think that he's probably not going to strike out, which Jason Hayward is against one of these lefties.
At least
Almora can put the ball in play and see if something can happen. I think the Dodgers defense has been looking a little sketchy. So let's move the baseball against some tough lefties and see what happens.
And I want to see, Joel, are you back with us? Can you hear us?
I am.
All right.
Yeah, I am, if you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you. So cool. Yeah, just wanted to kind of get your take again on the game and kind of the prospects for, the rest of the series, how things are looking for you and which players you're kind of paying attention to.
Well, I mean, I went on this long soliloquy about Javier Baez, and then I realized that I wasn't I was no longer in the podcast. So I don't know if you heard it, but Baez... You didn't? Okay.
No.
Well, I just went and, as you know, because if you want a deep dive into analytics, clearly you come to me for that. In game one against the Giants, his homer off Cueto came on a 3-2 pitch. His double in game one against the Dodgers came on a 1-2 pitch. Last night, his double that was, missed a homer by, 2 feet was on a 2-2 pitch. So to see what he's doing on two strikes is really exciting, and it just makes me, he's just metamorphosizing as a hitter, and I think it's great. So as for and I totally agree, I heard what Isaac was saying about Hayward. I don't want him near the plate these last 2 games. I couldn't believe that Madden didn't pitch it for him last night. I mean, I would have rather seen Soler or Contreras or Almora. And I don't – Hayward comes in maybe as a defensive replacement in the sixth or seventh. But to me, there's no question. You don't start him in either of these games. I can't see that as even a possibility.
Well, going back to Baez a little bit, Joel and I were texting back and forth a little bit about this, and not to get too ahead of ourselves in terms of next year, but going into the playoffs, he was not the regular starting second baseman. But after this postseason, and granted, we don't have to go too far back to look at what Soler did last year in the playoffs, and that a lot of people got so excited and he's the everyday guy and he's going to be a killer offensively. Who cares about the defense? He's done. He's set. He's a starter for the future of this team. Baez seems to have put himself into that conversation. I don't see how you can not play him every day come next year. But then you've got the whole Zobrist situation. And this is a great, fantastic problem to have. But do you guys think that with what he's done so far, he's really just earned himself a starting position somewhere on this team next year?
Yeah, and to answer your question with Soler, I actually never bought that he had earned himself a rock-hard starting position. And a lot of people disagree with me on that, but I guess we've seen that it's somewhat played out. Baez is different. Baez's skill set is different. His floor is much higher, and his defense is never going to rest. So I do think that he needs to bring that 150 times next year. I want to see him on the field virtually every day, and these improvements in approach at the plate are nothing but confirmation of that. If this is a guy that is going to work the count, he is going to take some walks, he is going to cut down with two strikes to try and put the ball in play, that's a guy you need out there every day. I still believe that Javi Baez's ceiling is that of an MVP candidate. He may not reach that ceiling, but you're seeing the tools blossom. And if he can take that next step offensively over a full season, then I don't see any reason why he can't be at least an MVP candidate at some point in his career.
Yeah, you know what's amazing is that what we're seeing with him over the last two series here is kind of the best case scenario. You know, I personally didn't know a lot about his defense. I just had heard about his quick bat and everyone compared him to Gary Sheffield. I heard, oh, his defense is decent. Well, he's proven to be, like a different species. Like some of these plays that he makes, the plays are ridiculous. That play where he dove and then flipped in midair and threw out. God, I forget who it was. And the guy tipped his hat to him. That was ridiculous. And his offense, you know, we all thought, oh, he's got a quick bat, he's got great power, but he strikes out so much. Well, his strikeout rate has dropped, you know, precipitously. 2015 it was 30%. This year it was 24%, which is, you know, in 2014 it was 41%. So he's almost halved it from 2 years ago. So, you know, like I said, it's like if you could kind of put him in a lab and tweak him and improve everything you want to improve, it's almost what's happened. So he's to me, it's a tough call between him and Lester for the MVP of the NLCS if we get to the point where we're dealing out that, you know, award. But he's been a complete difference maker. When I see someone come, if there's a high leverage situation at the plate, he's the guy I want at the plate. And like, who would have thought we'd be saying that 2 years ago?
Well, and I do want to talk a little bit. I do want to get into a little bit about the next game and Hendricks against Kershaw. But before we do that, I do want to talk a little bit about Chapman. He came in yesterday. He was warming up, looking like maybe he'd go in the eighth. Then they got a few more runs. He did not inspire confidence last night. And you keep hearing, well, he's a closer. Some closers are just used to coming in the ninth with a lead of, you know, three runs or less, whatever it might be. He just doesn't give you the warm, fuzzy feeling when he comes out of the bullpen. If it's a close game if it's a close score at the end of the game, how do you guys feel about? He's obviously going to be the guy, and Madden seems to be comfortable and okay giving him two innings at the end of the game. What's your guys' take, Isaac, on that?
Well, my take is I wish we had Andrew Miller on the Cubs rather than Aroldis Chapman. So I can't imagine how different I would feel about a possible World Series if the Indians had Chapman and the Cubs had Miller instead. I think it would be a huge leg up for the Cubs. So look, Joe needs to learn that Aroldis Chapman is only comfortable in one scenario, and that's a save situation with three outs to get in a clean inning. I don't want to see him in any other situation. Aroldis Chapman doesn't want to be in any other situation. He's not effective, and honestly, his attitude on the mound shows it. I didn't see all the post-game stuff, but it appeared that Chapman was upset with Madden for even bringing him in that game. And maybe
I did not read that.
Yeah, it looked like I was told that he kind of stiffed Madden for a hug, a congratulatory hug at the end of the game. And sort
I
of
did
a,
see yeah, that.
That's infuriating.
Yeah.
The body language was not good.
That to me ridiculous. Oh, it makes me want to throw something because there's so much petulance in that. I mean, all Joe's doing is getting him, you know, some warm-up tosses. It's just, you know what? This team isn't Aroldis Chapman, and he needs to know that. I really cannot stand that attitude. But at the end of the day, the Cubs need him. They need him to get three outs in the clean inning. And I don't think you'll see Joe use him in another high-leverage situation that isn't a clean inning save situation for three outs. And unfortunately, I think that there's... I think mentally he is not very strong out there on the mound, and I think that he needs to be used in only one fashion.
Yeah, I mean, Isaac, I completely agree, and I would think that's a no-brainer, and yet there he was warming up in the eighth, and I don't know why. I couldn't believe that. I was like,
I don't know why.
I'm like, that's not to put him in the game, is it? And I mean, between that and not pinch hitting for Hayward, that made me, you know, Madden was making some calls last night that made me pretty nervous. I feel like, you could lose a game. You know, again, we're just kind of assuming that we get to a situation where that this becomes an issue. But it reminded me of the Simpsons where Bart is touching the electrified cupcake and he just keeps touching it and doesn't learn and he gets stuck each time. He goes, ow, ow, ow. And that's what Mann's doing with Chapman. We've seen it twice just in the postseason where you put him in the eighth and it doesn't go well. I know he only gave up two runs when he came in with the bases loaded, but it doesn't look right. I didn't know about that petulance at the end of the game. That leaves a really sour taste in my mouth. I think clearly he's not on the team next year, which is fine with me. And Carlos, I think you're right. Like, for a guy who's supposed to be the the most automatic three outs in the game, I don't know. He's certainly making me nervous, and I do not want to see him in prior to the ninth inning. And I can't believe that Madden still hasn't seemed to learn that.
Well, let's try to look at it from a positive point of view in terms of touching the cupcake and getting electrocuted over and over. While we haven't gotten to the World Series yet, at least there's a chance that maybe Madden has gotten these opportunities to see in real time, tough situations. Okay, this is not something I want to repeat. Versus getting, potentially, next game or game seven of this series or potentially the World Series and saying, okay, well, it worked once before in the NLCS, so I'll put Chapman in there in the eighth. Maybe this has been good. I mean, they won the game, and he also got to see that, here we go again. This is not his best look coming into the eighth inning. You've got Rondon, you've got Strope, you've got the guys that can get you there, especially when Lester, threw the way he did. But maybe that's something that he'll pick up and learn from, and Hayward as well. I mean, who knows what'll happen? But let's shift gears a little bit into the next game. Clayton Kershaw, one of the best pitchers in the game. You're going to see the right-handed lineup come out. Anything else? I mean, I'm assuming Madden's just going to treat it the way he treated the first game against Kershaw in terms of who's going to be up there, in terms of strategy changes or anything like that. You guys see anything that they should try, anything different, or it's just going to be, let's go out there and do what we do?
So I guess we get to call this quick hit, don't touch the cupcake. Is that...
Good idea.
Only touch the cupcake for me. Once. This is like Michigan, Carlos. I like this. This is, we're getting a little taste of Big Sky Joel. So
Tickle My Cupcake is the title.
There you go.
Tickle My Cupcake.
Lower back tattoo says too, doesn't it, Carlos?
Dude, that's for the family, not for the people.
Sorry.
Joel, you are the only one that would know that. That's all I have to say.
Actually, I'm not.
Well, for game six, I'll point something out here. Everybody knows that Kyle Hendricks has been great at home this year and traditionally in his career, very comfortable at home. But did you know that Clayton Kershaw on the road over his career has not been nearly as effective as he has been at home? He on the road, he allows an OPS of about 70 points higher than he does at home. His ERA is 0.8 higher, 2.8 on the road over 128 starts or 128 games, 126 starts on the road. So his ERA is approaching 3 on the road in his career, which I think would surprise a lot of people to find out. So maybe there is a measure of not so much invincibility that the Cubs can take a hold there. And honestly, I liked their approach against him last game. I thought they were very close to getting to him, and
agreed.
Everybody is hitting much better now, especially the righties. Russell Baez is hitting, Wilco's hitting, Chris Bryant's been hitting all playoffs. So honestly, if they bench Hayward, which they're gonna do, and I would like to see somebody other than Montero in there, especially tomorrow. I'd like to see Wilco catching. I like their chances to get to Clayton Kershaw because they've got a righty stacked lineup. The only lefty is going to be Rizzo, and he's been getting hot lately. So if Kershaw mows through that order, then hand it to him, props to him, and let's go to game seven. But all in all, I think it's going to be an outstanding game.
Yeah, I feel like I'm Isaac's parrot here, but I completely agree with everything you said. I hadn't looked at Kershaw's numbers, but I know that prior to this year, he had kind of a reputation as a choker in the playoffs, which was clearly not deserved. But the point is, he's not, he wasn't Madison Bumgarner of the last couple of years. So Yeah, I think that you put, you know, you have the lineup that you had, and you put Contreras behind the plate, and you have Zobrist in left, and you just go with, you dance with who brung you. And I feel like, and this is, you know, not exactly revolutionary, but the key to me is scoring first. And even though the Dodgers tied it up, I felt like the Cubs really got a real big boost in the psychological department by going up 1-0 last night. And I remember hearing going into the game, someone said they described the game five setup as the Cubs being up 2-2. Because it just felt like they had the momentum. And so I think that kind of carries over, even though it was tied 1-1. I still feel like that they thought they were going to get to Lester more, and then they didn't. And he just, Lester just, you know, it wasn't a classic dominating performance, but he just, you know, he
beast mode.
Yeah. And Hendricks, if he can just be as chill as he's been and just keep the ball down, I also like the Cubs' chances.
Well, I'm looking forward to tomorrow's game, and I think one of the big parts of the puzzle here that will be nice to have back in play is the Wrigley faithful. After three games in LA, when you know every little shift of momentum was kind of compounded by the crowd, and you could feel it as a Cubs fan watching these games when something would go against you, and you would feel that crowd just like, yeah, feeding on it and getting louder and louder. It counts for something, and I'm looking forward to seeing how loud everybody can get and getting behind Kyle Hendricks.
Yep, I think that that's a great point. The only thing that worries me about that, if I'm diving deep into my meatballish here, I'm worried about the pressure cooker if something bad happens in the middle innings. And I've felt that Wrigley atmosphere turn on a dime to go from sort of exuberance to just utter pressure immediately. And that does worry me, but I think, Joel, you said that they need to get ahead early. And if they can put two runs on the board by the end of the third inning, then I like their chances to maintain that momentum. This is a team with so much swagger. They seem to be impervious to the pressure that the rest of us peons feel. So let's get it done in game six. I don't want to see a game seven. I don't want to see Arrieta back out there.
Yeah,
let's get it done.
Yes. Yeah, I feel like their chances are better because Arrieta has been such a wild card and, you know, clearly not the guy we hoped for.
Let's end this on a positive, Joel.
Okay. Let's Cubs. I like Isaac's suggestion that the Cubs go up early. Let's go up 3-0 on a Fowler single, a Rizzo double. Maybe another Baez homer, and then just kind of coast. Well, you know, just take it in from there.
From your lips, buddy.
All right, let's do it. Good time, guys.
All right.
See you.
See ya.